For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. North Korea claims it has successfully tested an intercontinental ballistic missile. If true, such a missile could have the potential range to hit the US mainland. The US and Russia both say the missile was intermediate range. In a tweet about North Korea's leader, US President Donald Trump has asked, "Does this guy have nothing better to do with his life?" Kate Fisher reports from Washington.
President Trump also suggested that regional allies may be running out of patience, saying that South Korea and Japan probably won't put up with these types of tests much longer. He also urged China to put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once and for all. It follows a phone call on Monday night with President Xi of China, where Trump raised the growing threat posed by North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile programs. All three leaders will meet at the end of the week for the G20 summit in Germany. North Korea has launched 11 missiles since the beginning of the year. Kate Fisher, Washington.
US-backed Syrian forces have breached the wall at Raqqa's Old City. The Syrian Democratic Forces, with support from US-led coalition airstrikes, have spent months encircling the city, which the Islamic State seized in 2014 and made its de facto capital. A spat's broken out between two of the leaders of the European Union's most important institutions after one called the other very ridiculous. European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker lashed out at the European Parliament for so few of its members turning up to main debate sessions. Jack Parrock reports.
"The European Parliament is ridiculous, very ridiculous," said the President of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, who addressed the European Parliament's plenary session in Strasbourg to an almost empty room. No more than 30 of the 750 members of the Parliament had turned up to debate the outcome of the recent Maltese presidency of the European Union. But his comments weren't welcomed by the President of the Parliament, Antonio Tajani, who said it's not the Commission's job to control the Parliament, it's the Parliament that has to control the European Commission.
India's Supreme Court is pushing New Delhi to give Indian citizens another chance to deposit old notes following the government's demonetization move. The court's told the government it has 2 weeks to respond. Our India correspondent Rebecca Bundon reports from Mumbai.
India's Supreme Court says that authorities should not trash a person's genuine hard-earned money and let it go to waste. In November, the Indian government suddenly banned the two highest value 500 rupee and 1,000 banknotes in an effort to crack down on illegal money flows. The ban left many Indians struggling to return their old notes in time. The Supreme Court says that in genuine cases, people should be given a chance to exchange their old notes.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to the programme to you. It is Tuesday, 4th of July 2017, which means it's Independence Day in the United States. I hope you've had a good day wherever you happen to be in the world. My name is Richie Allen, by the way. Do tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Got a terrific programme lined up for you this Tuesday. Let's do it.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
And as always, bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. Most of what I talk about tonight covered in great detail at davidicke.com. Happy Independence Day. Got some music for you. I dug out for you. I'll play it in a second. Coming up tonight, Michael Shrimpton, the former barrister, the intelligence expert, the author of Spy Hunter. Michael is going to be on to react to the Jersey Care Home inquiry published yesterday. Michael believes the revelations in the inquiry don't even begin to scratch the surface of the depths of depravity, of murder, of torture of children in Jersey and elsewhere. In the second hour, I'm thrilled is that my great friend Jamie Icke joins me in the studio. Jamie's come up from Derby. We'll talk about a few things. We'll talk about the Worldwide Wake Up Tour. We'll talk about the three events David has lined up for the launch of his book. And we'll talk about Jamie himself and plans that we've got for a live phone-in show with Jamie a little bit later on in the summer. How cool is that, Jamie Ike? And I will, of course, open the phone lines to you. So, while we're talking about Jersey with Michael Shrimpton, there's anything you want to say about that, you can tell me about it in the second hour. This is your Richie Allen Show. Because I'm a nice guy, I dug this out. It's the only thing I could dig out for Independence Day. Hey? The older listeners who would have seen Rocky in 1976 will remember this, of course. Happy Independence Day. Anyway, we'll leave that right there. Thought long and hard over the last few days about what to do. And I remembered that in previous years when I'd invited guests on from the United States, I was pretty much turned down constantly by people saying, no, it's a holiday, Richie, we're not going to come on your radio programme. So no American guests tonight. I hope you're having a fabulous time. I'm sure there's baseball on, barbecues, parties. The beaches will be packed right across the US. Have a really good time. Now, moving on. Manufactured crisis. That's what the North Korean ICBM story is. ICBM, Intercontinental Ballistic Missile. It's a manufactured crisis, I think. But it could turn deadly, remember. All that separates North Korea from Seoul, the capital of the South, is a mountain, and that's about the size of it. And the North Koreans have around 10,000 guns, missile launchers, and everything you can think of, every bit of hardware pointed directly at Seoul. It must be said, there are missiles pointed in the other direction as well. Tens of thousands of people could be killed in a matter of hours there. The South Korean government wants to establish better relations with its counterparts in the North. That's a good thing. It's all true. The South wants to establish a dialogue with the North, but the Zionist neocon-controlled Donald Trump and his cabinet wants to dispense with diplomacy, and they want to goad and badger Japan and China into taking action against North Korea. It's insane. Trump tweeted earlier today, "It's hard to believe that South Korea and Japan will put up with this much longer. Perhaps China will put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once and for all." A heavy move. What does a heavy move mean? Well, presumably it means airstrikes. Presumably it means the Chinese and the Japanese bombing Pyongyang from the skies, which would be devastating again, because only miles from the North Korean-South Korean border is the capital of South Korea, Seoul. So any bombing of North Korea by the Chinese and the Japanese would undoubtedly start a war in Asia, which, believe it or not, the Archon-controlled neocon Zionists actually want. More blood sacrifice, more chaos, more devastation. Trump has been banging on about North Korea now for about 3 or 4 months. I know some of you will say, well, he did also say that he'd really like to meet Kim Jong-un and speak to him personally. But the rhetoric has changed a lot in the last few months. Now, the North Koreans released video appearing to show a successful test of an ICBM, which can carry a nuclear payload. It's a long-range missile, and everybody says it's unacceptable. It's being said that North Korea has to be stopped. In other words, it's okay for us to develop weapons and have nuclear bomb capability, but not the North Koreans. Now, North Korea, whatever the reality is for people living there, and I'm sure it's pretty bad. I'm sure it's exaggerated, but I'm sure it is pretty bad. It's an autocracy. However bad it might be for people living there, it isn't, as a country, going to attack its neighbours anytime soon. It isn't. And it would never launch any missiles at the western seaboard of the United States anytime soon, because it would be obliterated. It would be obliterated in minutes. So it's all posturing. It's being threatened repeatedly by the Zionist puppet in the White House, threatened with violence and with further financial sanctions. So it's just posturing. So this is a manufactured crisis, but one which could turn deadly at any minute. And at the same time, Donald Trump has identified Iran as the next place for regime change. And they're not even hiding this. Nikki Haley, Rex Tillerson, openly talking about challenging, changing even the guard in Tehran. Right? These are sick, evil, warmongering puppies, aren't they? They're sick. And the media is disgusting, properly disgusting. John Hemmings, with an S, not to be confused with the politician John Hemming, wrote in the Telegraph today that we are sleepwalking towards a global war and that, quote, Russia and China are enabling it. Are you shitting me? Who supports this? I mean, do you support it? You're listening to this in your car. You might be in your house. Do you support this? Of course you don't. The average American, do you think the average American supports this bollocks? No. They're not interested, or they have no interest in slaughtering millions of people and changing other countries' governments. Nobody supports these bellends. Nobody. There's no support for them. You don't want the conflict. You can't even confront your neighbour. Parties at 4 o'clock in the morning, music blaring, and you're like, will we go around and knock, John? Oh no, I might say something to them tomorrow. We don't like conflict, we don't want it. We go a million miles away from conflict. Yet these lunatics, anything for a peaceful life, we say, these lunatics pushing for a protracted conflict that could kill millions of people. So why does it happen? Why are we being pushed to the brink by these people? And we are being pushed to the brink. Answers on a postcard. I'm not going to answer my own question because it's something we've said too many times on this programme and in these monologues. Maybe when we have the phone lines open in the second hour, you might want to talk about that. Why does it happen? The majority. Every person you ever met in your life doesn't want to fight anybody, let alone bomb people in Lebanon, in Syria, in Yemen, in Libya, in China, God knows where. I'll leave that there, 11 minutes past the hour. The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. The Prime Minister, Theresa May, is continuing to withhold a Home Office report on the foreign funding of British terrorist organisations. This is disgraceful. This report was finalised 6 months ago and it's gathering dust on a shelf somewhere in Whitehall. This is sickening evidence of the tyranny of the fascist state that we live in. A report exists that was finished 6 months ago, which clearly identifies Saudi Arabia as funding terrorist groups in this country, including people connected with attacks in this country in the last 3 to 4 months. Right? Now, the report was commissioned to investigate foreign states funding extremist groups in the UK. The government will not release this thing. It doesn't matter who kicks off about it. It doesn't matter who complains about it. They won't release it because it is embarrassing. Because it shows that Saudi Arabia are world champions at spending money on, in particular, funding radical jihadists, not only here, but in other European countries, including funding mosques where a Wahhabi, Salafi type of Islam is being espoused in those mosques. Caroline Lucas from the Green Party today. It's astonishing, said Caroline Lucas. What are you going to do about it, love? It's astonishing. Do something about it. Next time Prime Minister's Questions is on, bring them to a halt. Stand up screaming until you're dragged out by your heels, saying we want that report. Why won't they release the report? Because Saudi Arabia is, as we speak, bombing Yemen back to the Stone Age, doing it with British weapons and British officers in the control rooms telling the Saudis how to use the equipment. Here's how you use the joystick there. And if you press the red button there, that's going to kill 20,000 fucking people. That's why they don't want to release the report. How embarrassing for the government. Our complicity in the murder of Yemenis. And at the same time, the Saudis are funding terrorism in this country and elsewhere. 14 minutes past the hour. This came up yesterday, and I didn't do it yesterday because I didn't have any time. We talked a lot about the Jersey report yesterday. But this drove me absolutely crackers yesterday. And again, you might want to talk about this when the phone is open in hour two, when the line is open, I should say, in hour two. An 8-month-old baby is possibly the first person in the world to have their gender marked as unknown on their health card. Cheryl Attlee's gender has been marked with a U on her Canadian health card. U means undetermined or unassigned. The baby's parent, somebody called Corey Doty, doesn't identify as male or female and prefers to use the pronoun they and wants to raise their child genderless until the baby has a sense of self and command of vocabulary to tell me who they are. That's what the parent said. We're not going to define what the baby is. Now, the baby either has a penis or a vagina. It couldn't be any simpler than that. If it has a vagina, it's a girl. If it has a penis, it's a boy, right? You would have thought so. No. No. The baby will be genderless until the baby is ready to tell me who they are. This is madness, isn't it? The parent, Doty, wants to keep Cyril's gender off all official records until that particular day, according to CBC broadcaster in Canada. Do you know what makes me really pissed off about this story? Is that the person who wrote the story goes along with this bullshit. They refer to the parent as they, not as him or her. So the story reads, they said, I'm recognising them as a baby and trying to give them all the love and support to be the most whole person that they can be. They and them are fucking plural terms. They means two or three or four people. Them means them over there, three or four people. What's going on? What's going on? And of course, any attempt to talk about this is you're transphobic. I couldn't give less of a damn. And I'm not going to pull the old card of I have trans friends. I don't. I wish I did, but I don't. But I have known transgender men and women. I've met transgender men and women along the way. I don't care. But this bollocks. And you know, British Columbia, the district, is going along with this. And there are groups campaigning. There are groups campaigning that every health card, wait for this, every single one of them should omit the gender of the baby. It doesn't matter what the parents are or what the parents claim to be. They're all saying we should omit the gender for every single child. Let's have a non-binary gender option on there until the child or the person decides what they want to be in the future. It's utter madness, isn't it? It's 17 minutes past the hour. I so desperately tried to get some comment on that issue on the programme today. I have invited people on to talk about it. I mean, Peter Tatchell has been on before talking about it. We've had a ding-dong about it. Peter knows where I'm coming from. I don't have a prejudicial bone in my body. This is just insanity, and we know where this is going. This is all about a gender-neutral world, isn't it? Eh? 17 and a half minutes past the hour. Michael Shrimpton is standing by, so I'm going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I'm going to read one or two tweets, then we'll have some music. Michael Shrimpton, later on in the programme, delighted that Jamie Icke is in the studio. Jamie, of course, who manages and produces the Worldwide Wake Up Tour, as well as he does a lot more besides as well. Chief even cook and bottle washer at thegoodshipdavidike.com. Back in exactly 60 seconds.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back to the programme, The Richie Allen Show, in association with davidike.com for Tuesday, the 4th of July, 2017. It's exactly 19 minutes past the hour. Michael Shrimpton has made contact. He's in the green room. He's not really. He's in his home, or he's at his home, and he'll be with us in a minute to talk about Jersey. He'll give us his reaction to the findings of the Jersey Care Home inquiry, which was published yesterday and has been very controversial. So it has. Frances Oldham QC was the woman behind it. I think she was well-intentioned. I really do. But I think the report has the hallmarks of a whitewash. I really do believe that. Right, so music then, before we get Michael on. You might hear a bit of actuality during the programme. Actuality, of course, means background noise. We've got all the windows open in the studio because it's one of those muggy old summer evenings here in the great city of Manchester. So music from the Mock Turtles. Speaking of Manchester, this is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio and richieallen.co.uk. My name is Richie Allen. This is Europe's most listened to independent radio show. That isn't an idle boast, it's a fact. Michael Shrimpton is next. If you've got anything to say about the Jersey Care Home Inquiry, tweet it to me and I will put it to Michael. This is serious stuff. Marvellous bit of music this. Can You Dig It from the Mock Turtles on your Richie Allen Show. Back with Michael Shrimpton in exactly 3 minutes. Minutes past the hour, the Mock Turtles, Can You Dig It on the Richie Allen Show. Now, yesterday evening, we told you that children might still be at risk in Jersey's care system. That was announced by Francis Oldham QC, who released the published inquiry into the, it was the Independent Jersey Care Inquiry. Some staggering revelations made. Staggering for people who are not aware of this issue and of what has gone on in Jersey and elsewhere. But staggering information indeed. Frances Oldham QC led the inquiry. She also recommended demolishing the Horta de la Garenne children's home where much of this abuse took place. Must remind you, the inquiry was looking into 7 decades of claims of abuse. Our guest this hour is no stranger to you. He is the author of the excellent Spy Hunter book, a very highly regarded barrister in his time, terrific blogger and writer. You can catch him at Veterans Today. Check out veteranstoday.com. It's always a pleasure to welcome back to the programme our friend Michael Shrimpton. Michael, welcome back.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back. I hope you can hear me all right.
I'm getting you loud and clear, Michael. Thanks very much. What were your initial thoughts when you got the, I suppose, the synopsised version of the report? What did you think?
Well, I should stress these are first blush thoughts. I haven't had the opportunity to read the report fully, although I have looked at it. It's quite an extensive report. There are 9 appendices and I think about 13 separate chapters. It's in 3 volumes. So it certainly doesn't lack for weight in terms of carrying it about. With respect to Frances Oldham, I've known for a number of years, a very nice lady, it does lack weight in terms of its conclusions.
Well, this is the thing, you see. Sorry, Michael, go ahead. You dropped out momentarily. Go ahead there.
I was going to say it's not going to settle the long-running dispute or issue as to whether or not German intelligence, GO2, that's the German operation in London, arranged for the placement of children in Jersey, in particular at Haute de la Garenne, and whether or not numbers of those children, in particular boys, were murdered, including by Edward Heath, with involvement of Jimmy Savile.
Savile doesn't get a mention, Michael. As far as I understand, Jimmy Savile doesn't get a mention in the report. No mention whatsoever.
No, that doesn't surprise me. I'm not criticising Frances Oldham personally. It would be wrong to describe the report as a whitewash. It makes some valuable recommendations, and it's certainly heard from a large number of witnesses, some 200, with written evidence from other former children who had been in care. I'm not saying that the report lacks value. It does have some value. But it doesn't do much more than scratch the surface. To say it barely scratched the surface, I think, would be unkind. It does address fundamental failings in the state of Jersey care system, but it misses the fundamental point. It's dealing with a nursing home that was the former headquarters of German intelligence in World War II in Jersey. It manages not to mention that. And it's dealing with a children's home that was housing children who were then being taken out to Morning Cloud 4? Taken out to more than one Morning Cloud. There were a series of yachts called Morning Cloud. Were being taken out to yachts owned by Edward Heath, bumped off, weighed down with an anchor chain after being horrendously abused and tossed over the side. None of this comes out because none of the witnesses to this, and there are some witnesses who Jersey police in England and Jersey have interviewed, none of these witnesses have been called, and of course I wasn't called.
Michael, do me a favour. I'm going to ask you to do me a favour. Can you quickly text me on Skype, text me your landline number or mobile number? The connection is terrible. You're obviously a fantastic speaker as a barrister, and we can hear what you're saying, but the connection is dreadful. Can you do that, and I'll give you a call back, and we'll connect that way. Is that okay?
We'll try it through the mobile. How's that? Is that better? I'm using the reason I asked about how you were receiving it is because I have a fancy new headset which is wireless, and I'm just wondering.
Do us a favour. Dispense with the headset and just do it as you would have normally done it.
Right, okay, let's do that.
Let's try that then. Michael Shrimpton is on the line, folks. If you haven't read the book Spy Hunter, you can find it at all good online retailers. I think it might be available on amazon.co.uk. A terrific book. We're talking to Michael about the inquiry, which was published yesterday, the Jersey Independent Care Home Inquiry, which was headed up by Frances Oldham QC. And Michael has just said, as you heard there, that it barely scratches the surface of what went on in Jersey. He also said it doesn't deal with children being taken from the care home and brought to yachts owned by former UK Prime Minister Edward Heath, where some children were murdered. Michael, I hope...
Can you hear me now, Richard?
That's a bit better, that, Michael, yeah.
Excellent. I've dispensed with the headset. The idea of the headset was to improve the quality of radio interviews. That clearly the technology is.
Yeah, give it back to Radio Shack and demand a refund. It's much better without it, I think. So we understand that it wasn't just Edward Heath's yacht. We understand that the yachting fraternity, wealthy people, connected people, would come in their yachts and children would be told, you're going to have a nice day out now on the yacht. They would be raped. And many times they would return to the home and on occasion, when they complained about it, they were tortured. One of the residents said that electrical wires were placed on his body when he reported that he'd been abused on these yachts. So Heath is obviously very important in the cover-up there, but it seems a lot of people were coming to Jersey in yachts to pick up children, Michael, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. It was. I'm quite sure it wasn't just Edward Heath. I was particularly interested in Edward Heath, but yes, I wouldn't argue against that.
Jimmy,
how are we doing for volume?
We're doing marvellous for volume. I'm getting you loud and clear.
Good.
So, Jimmy, it was said that Jimmy Savile never went anywhere near the island, but then we saw that famous picture of Savile on the island, surrounded by children.
Well, it was said that Edward Heath couldn't drive, and then we saw the famous picture of Heath turning up at a Tory party conference in Blackpool in a Rover 2000 TC. Of course, he could drive, and he in fact owned a motor car. Yes, of course, Savile went down to the Channel Islands. But the point is that since Savile was being protected by the Cabinet Office, and since the Cabinet Office were penetrated by German intelligence, it's inevitable that as soon as stories, as soon as the truth started to surface, there would be a determined effort to ravish it.
The German intelligence aspect of this is important. And I think when I first spoke with you some years ago, I didn't understand the importance of it. There's undoubtedly evidence that German intelligence was using it as a means to coerce and to blackmail people. But also, there was an ongoing paedophile, VIP paedophile network running there at the same time anyway. And tell me this, well, Michael, tell me this. What part does the system of government in Jersey play in all of this? How did the unique system of government facilitate this going on?
Well, I'm not sure that it did. I mean, this is Frances Old. I mean, I did call her Frances. I'm sure she won't mind. We don't know each other terribly well, but we were on the same circuit at the bar. She was a scion of the Midland and Oxford circuit. She's a very distinguished barrister, and a very good barrister too. Certainly, with an independent frame of mind. The problem with Frances is not, she wouldn't for a moment have covered up murder. The problem is that she wouldn't for a moment have thought that she was. It's just, she's intelligence illiterate, which is not a criticism. There's no reason why she should be. She's a good lawyer, but she's a lawyer. And this is the problem with all judicial inquiries or all lawyer-led inquiries. The lawyers and judges tend to be intelligence illiterate. And if they're inquiring into misdeeds of intelligence agencies, they need to know who the agencies are and what they've been up to.
Yeah.
I don't suppose Frances has ever heard of GO2. And if you haven't heard of GO2, then you're not going to get to the bottom of abuse of children in Jersey.
A few years ago, around about the time you and I first spoke, police officers said they found the remains of people in a cellar at Haute de la Garenne. This was later on retracted. And as I understand it, Michael, police officers who worked on that very initial discovery were moved on, which thinks of a massive cover-up, right? Tell us about that. What happened to when these bones were found, these teeth and bones in this cellar, what happened after that?
Well, it's unsurprising that the police looked at the grounds of the home. What the police discovered in Jersey was that there were inadequate records, not just in Jersey, but also inadequate records in England. The Cabinet Office, remember, in the late 60s and early 70s, the Cabinet Office was controlled from Germany. That's because the Cabinet Secretaries of the day, John Hunt and his predecessors, Norman Brook, and so on, were German agents. And this goes all the way back to the formation of the Cabinet Office at the suggestion of the head of German intelligence in 1916. The whole idea of the Cabinet Office was to concentrate power in Whitehall to make it easier for Germany to subvert Whitehall, because they could put what they, if they put one man in as Cabinet Secretary, and the Cabinet Secretary controlled the whole of Whitehall, and Germans could control the whole of Whitehall virtually by getting their man in as Cabinet Secretary.
Because all roads led to the European Union. This is all about the European Union.
All roads led to the European Union. Now, John Hunt, who's pro-EU, along with Heath, was the Cabinet Secretary of the day, and he, of course, was both a paedophile, mixed up with Savile, and was protected from Savile. Because the whole operation was protected from the Cabinet Office, local authorities, which increasingly in modern times report to the Cabinet Office, local authorities were encouraged to send kids down to Jersey. One of the things that I don't think Frances has really picked up on is the origins of the kids. It's all, we're reading her report, it's almost as though the kids were exclusively sent there from Jersey. They weren't. Kids were sent down to Haute de la Garenne from Birmingham and elsewhere.
From all over the shop. From all over the shop. And for things like being rude or stealing a box of Smarties from a local shop, which again... Yeah. And because your story's intertwined, when I say your stories, I mean you and David Icke, of course, because both of you have spent years researching what happened there. This is where Frances Oldham QC probably just doesn't have any understanding of the scale of this.
I mean, I'm certainly in capital punishment, but even I wouldn't say that you should be sentenced to death for stealing a the smartest.
No, that's right. But they were specifically being chosen so that they could be sent there to be raped and to be buggered.
Well, exactly. And then, yeah. And then you raise the records. This is where it becomes very difficult for an inquiry like the Jersey inquiry. There are no records of what kids have been sent. Either they're not kept or they're kept and then they're destroyed. So they're only kept for a short period
and
of time.
Michael, presumably, and I don't want to be stating the bleeding obvious, but for some of our listeners overseas, they maybe are unfamiliar with how these things happened. We're talking about a time when children were definitely picked from families who, God love them, they didn't have much going for them. They didn't have much status in the community. They had nobody to speak for them. So they could pull a child from a poor family. They had nobody to stand up for them. The child was taken because they were rude in school or because they were in a fight behind the bike sheds, off to Jersey you go, sexual torture, unimaginable, unspeakable horrors. That was your lot if you went to Jersey. I mean, some of the things that some of the victims have said happened there. And Michael, you see, this is why I refer to David. Not because I defer to David, I don't do that. I refer to him because this is satanic in nature, some of this stuff. You know, this ritualistic torture, it wasn't about punishment. Some of these children have said, over the years, some of these grown men contacted people like David Icke and said, it wasn't, I didn't get stuck with electric wires, so I wouldn't eat too much food at dinner or because I was late for a class or whatever. They were getting their kicks out of it. This was ritualistic in nature, right?
Yes.
Michael, who the fuck are these people?
Well, it comes back to German intelligence. This is organised by GO2. The German intelligence wasn't shut down in 45. The Abwehr station in London, GO2, also controlled, the Abwehr directly controlled the Channel Islands because they were under German occupation. When the German military leave, German intelligence doesn't. And that is the problem. It's not just Jersey. The German intelligence operation in Jersey carried on, and so did the operation in London.
Can I argue with you there? Because while I don't disagree with that, I've got to say this. For me, the Frankfurt Rothschilds we're talking about here, these people identified, because paedophilia and satanic worship is endemic in their own circles. They identified amongst the establishment here that this was going on and they chose to exploit that. It's fair to say that. This was always there amongst the elites and amongst the political class. Remember...
Go ahead. The Rothschild family are... There are three Rothschild families at DDS. You've got the nice Rothschilds who are British. You've got the French Rothschilds who are not so bad.
They're all the same, Michael.
Nice island. And then you've got the Rotter, you've got the nasty Rothschilds who are German Rothschilds. No offence intended. And they have worked very closely with German intelligence. So Victor Rothschild, classic examples, Victor Rothschild, he was a German spy inside MI5. He was a very important spy. He protected the Cambridge ring, who were reported to Germany, not to Russia. So the Rothschilds are very closely involved in German intelligence. And of course, the German intelligence has usually done the Rothschilds' offshore banking for them. So the Rothschilds have made lots of money out of it. I always caution people against going overboard on the satanic ritual aspects of it. It puts people off, but also...
Yeah, but Michael, hang on. And you're somebody I hold in the highest regard. But I'm going to kick you in the arse here. I don't care if it sounds weird and if it sounds horrible. It's the truth, Michael. We've heard from psychotherapists on this program from four corners of the earth, respected men and women like Sandra Fecht in Canada, who through their practice were hearing from people, telling them credible stories about the nature of this abuse, the satanic element, not to all of it, but to much of it. People I spoke to in Australia. Go ahead.
The satanic element is there, but it's ritual. It's not. We're not dealing with people who believe in Satan. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in Satan. The ritual is there as a. It's a convenient excuse for getting the forcing kids to take their clothes off. It's cover for sex. But it's not a ritual in which they believe, and the Jesuits don't believe in God, but they have their own rituals. You go to a Jesuit mass, and you see all the ritual there, but it's for show.
I don't know, Michael. In our experience, the evidence that I've seen you know, presented by David and others. And, you know, you follow David over the years. You know the absolute shit that David took for talking about this stuff. And he's never been sensationalist about it. You know, he says for some of these people, they really do believe in it, Michael. They think they are worshipping some sort of demigod, this demiurge thing. They really do. Well, and that becomes a part of what they do.
It's possible that some of the people involved might, but I think that would have to be a minority only. And the difficulty is
Let me ask you a question then. Let me ask you a question. I'll shut the hell up and give you the floor. Let me ask you a question. Why would they do things like... I mean, look, I don't know how to categorise paedophiles. Jesus, I'm not a paedophile. I don't know anything about it, right? I'm not a paedophile. There are people who fancy children and they have to be kept away from children. And if they ever go near a child, they have to be locked up for a long time. And then there are people who do unspeakable things, this ritualistic stuff involving these horrendous tortures. And then the murders. I mean, we got off the segment there where we were talking about the remains being found in Jersey. Michael, that's a whole different thing beyond the disgusting, despicable fancying of children, which is terrible and wrong and is bad and there's no excuse for it. But this is another level, Michael. Murdering children and burying them and cutting up their bodies and what the fuck? Like, you know, there is something different. Rather than, that's not just German intelligence and that's not just, you know, your paedophiles doing what paedophiles do. There's something else going on there. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Well, that's the point I'm making. You asked a very good question. Why do it? It's not just because certain individuals or a group of individuals want to abuse kids or clearly have sex with kids because they're weak and can't have sex with adults. It's not just because they have perverted sexual desires. The operation in Jersey required a great deal of money. It required a great deal of organization. And this was organized by a state, Germany, through its covert intelligence network in London for a reason. And the reason was nothing to do with a desire by Germany to satisfy the perverted lusts of pedophiles in England. The reason was Germany's desire to control England.
Therefore,
it was a very effective method of suborning British politicians, was to get them involved and cabinet office officials and so on. A very effective, deadly, deadly effective method of suborning them is to get them involved in these paedophile rings.
Today,
GO2 can supply live kids.
Yeah.
Two politicians who could abuse them, save them the knowledge that the kids would be murdered. That was what was happening with Ted Heath. He was being supplied with teenage boys. He would have his way with them, golden showers and all the rest of it. And then the boys, save them the knowledge, the boys couldn't shop him because they'd been murdered. Now, that required state intervention, and it required heavy-duty protection. And this is what Frances has missed, with respect. She's looked, her inquiry has had a very narrow focus on Jersey. There's almost no reference to London at all, but the kids were coming from, many of the kids that were lost were coming from England. The people who were abusing them, but like Everett Heath, were coming from England. The rings that were involved in connecting the abusers with the kids were run by people like Jimmy Savile, based in England, and they were being protected by the Cabinet Office, because the Cabinet Office was being supplied, the Cabinet Secretary today was being supplied with kids as well.
Here's the question. Here's the question for you on the Cabinet Office. So yeah. Back in 2008, if memory serves me, Gordon Brown was Prime Minister, right?
He was indeed, yes.
Right. So the police find teeth and bone fragments from what might be 250 different bodies. All of a sudden, this is buried. Who buried it, Michael? Nobody that I've ever spoken to has had, you know, as much close contact with intelligence agencies here and elsewhere as you. Who covers that up? Is it the cabinet? Is it the Cabinet Office in 2008? Does it go, you know, I don't want to be making accusations against Gordon Brown or anybody else, but back then, would he have had a say in the investigation in Jersey back then? Or who would have shut that down then?
That could only be the Cabinet Office, because the Cabinet Office controls the CBS, it controls the police. The Cabinet Office has significant influence in Jersey. Indirectly, because the states have their own, states of Jersey have their own bureaucracy. the cabinet office has significant influence. And that derives, it all goes back to the German occupation. The Channel Islands were occupied by Germany, and there was a stay behind German organization. So the States of Jersey effectively is a German mini state.
I'm going to disagree. It's not that you're contradicting yourself when you say that the state of Jersey is a mini state. But when
German mini state.
German influence
in Jersey continued after 45 to the point where effectively Jersey was not independent.
You know, the point I'm making is, when I said to you a few minutes ago, did Jersey's system of government contribute to what happened and to it going on? And you said you didn't think so. Jersey, I think it's got about 50 MPs, something like that, maybe two or three more, maybe two or three less. No political parties. And its politicians, judges, policemen and business leaders all come from a tiny clique and have done forever and a day.
That's the definition, right, of...
A mini state that is answerable to nobody, and it basically allowed this go on. I mean, this went on with the complicity of the people in charge in Jersey, probably the participation as well as the complicity, right?
Yeah, but I'm not suggesting that we need wholesale reform of the political system in Jersey. It wouldn't make any difference. What's needed is to shut down GO2. London, the parliamentary system at Westminster, doesn't really need reform, but nevertheless, Germany's been able to subvert Parliament. That's because we allow German intelligence to operate in London. We allow German intelligence to tap the phones of every MP and every peer, and that allows Germany to acquire blackmail material.
Agents of the Rothschilds.
All that nonsense has got to stop. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you elect the House of Lords, whether you go back to hereditary peers. If German intelligence are tapping the phones of every MP and peer, it doesn't matter how they're elected, which party they're in. If they're not sleeping with their wives or their husbands, they're again be providing blackmail material from the other side. If they're in financial difficulties, the Germans may arrange to bail them out, in which case they become bought and paid for.
Tell me, will the publishing of the report, the publication of the report yesterday, will it give a moment of pause to the paedophile rings that continue to operate with immunity, it would appear, in the UK in 2017? And will it give them a moment of pause? No, it won't, you're saying.
No, they won't have broken sweat. They'll have known from the time the inquiry was set up that its terms of reference were limited. The people starting the inquiry were never going to call people like me or David Icke, who might bring the truth out. And, of course, the whole inquiry was not only narrowly focused on Jersey, ignoring the Cabinet Office in London altogether, but pretty much ignored. But it also ignored the dead children. They only heard from, by definition, they only heard from live witnesses. By definition, a live witness is someone who survived their incarceration in hope they'll never grow. But my concern is with the children who were murdered. And they, of course, can't be there. There is nobody to speak for them other than David Icke and myself. And yourself.
There's no trace. There's no trace of these children.
They have no witness statements from them that they made before they died. They can't be called as witnesses. There are no records they were ever there.
Kinkora, we had Kinkora. We know all about Dolphin Square in London.
Kinkora is similar, yes, exactly. Yeah. Kinkora was protected by the Cabinet Office too, I'm sure.
Michael Shrimpton is on the line. We've only got a couple of minutes left on this. If you haven't read Spy Hunter, you really have missed a trick. I can't recommend it highly enough. Michael is a barrister, not practising right now, should be though. We won't go into that now, but a terrific guy, and writes, of course, for Veterans Today. Go to veteranstoday.com to find Michael's articles. So whether or not Francis Oldham QC was honourable or not, and I tend to be like you, I'm not as cynical as maybe I should be. I tend to think these people do get into these inquiries with the best of intentions, but I think
Francis is honourable.
They get stonewalled, Michael, don't they? They're stonewalled at every bloody juncture. This is the thing. Yes. I mean, she'll never come out and say that, but I bet you if she was to release her notes that she made during the three years of the inquiry, she would say, I was stonewalled, 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 stonewalled. And in the end, I made the best of the information I had. And I put out a report, and damn it, there you go, there's the report.
Yes, I think that's true. It's a limited report, but that's no reflection on Frances. It's a limited report reflecting the limited evidence which the inquiry had.
Does she have a responsibility, Michael? If that is the case, does she not have a responsibility to address the public and say, like, for example, Thomas Keane, the man who headed up the 9/11 Commission, he had the good manners to tell us all 3 years afterwards that the report was a load of bollocks. He basically said it was set up to fail. I had no help whatsoever from the State Department, from the government, from the FBI, from nobody. Do you think if it is the case that Frances was messed around, that she has a responsibility to say, listen, this is the report, but I wish I could have done X, Y, or Z? What do you think?
Well, I wish she would. I don't think she will. I think she will say that she's now functus officio, and I don't think we'll be hearing from Frances again, save possibly a conference or something. I don't think we'll be hearing, firstly, any criticisms of the inquiry staff or of stonewalling. I think that if she speaks about the subject again, it will only be in a very, it'll only be in a very limited way. She's not going to upset the apple cart.
We have now, again, I'm not including Frances in this because I don't know Frances personally, and to be fair to Frances Oldham,
it's very nice.
Well, you know, Michael, the point I was going to make is, you know, the people who had survived the abuses at Oath de la Garenne, they were happy enough with the appointment of Frances Oldham, and so I'm happy enough with it. But these days, my friend, we have, when I say we have, our government has a penchant for appointing two inquiries ringers, don't they? People like Elizabeth Butler-Slosson and Fiona Wolfe. And now there's absolute murders over the appointment of this Martin Bick guy to head up the Grenfell Tower inquiry.
Sir Martin Warbeck, I think Sir Martin is a little bit like Francis Holder. He's a man of integrity. I don't know him. I haven't been in front of him.
But he doesn't like poor people very much, and because he doesn't like poor people very much, he really shouldn't be head of that inquiry. Let's be honest about it.
I don't know. It's not so much that he doesn't like poor people, it's just he's never met any.
He's made some shocking decisions, Michael. He sent a woman, or he tried to send a woman 50 miles away from her home when it became uninhabited. She was sick. Hang on, let me finish. She was sick. It was said during the hearing by various medical experts that it was vital that she was rehomed as close to her home as possible because her neighbours were helping her out because she had a debilitating illness. And the bastard still rubber stamped that she was sent out of Westminster Council 50 miles away. But thankfully, a Supreme Court judge overruled it. He shouldn't be heading up the Grenfell Tower inquiry. He's the wrong man for
it. I don't think he's the right man, but that's because he's not intelligence literate. He's not going to ask the right questions. But I wouldn't call him a bastard. Apparently, he's quite a nice chap. He's been criticised over this decision about this lady that the council wanted sent to Milton Keynes. But
that was rotten, Michael. I mean, listen, I know you're a nice guy, mate. You know, I've known you a few years. That is rotten. What sort of bastard does that? You know, all the evidence says, listen, keep the woman here. You know.
It wasn't the judge who was doing that. It was the council. The judge in judicial review is a very limited remedy. The judge is providing a sort of long stop oversight of the legality and rationality of the local authority.
Michael, pull the other one. He got to make the decision. He got to make the final decision on whether she went.
That's the one thing he couldn't do. The one thing a judicial review judge cannot do is take the decision himself or herself. They've got to send it back to the decision maker. The judge is not the decision maker. The decision maker is the public authority. All the judge is doing is reviewing the legality of the process by which the decision was reached.
In fairness, you know a lot more about this process than I do, so I'm going to defer to your expertise.
Listen, I'm very familiar with it.
Yeah. You are, of course, because you've been part of these cases. Absolute final question then, and I'm going to make it on Grenfell again. Regeneration and social cleansing. There are billions and billions of pounds to be made in real estate. Do you think... Now, I'm not suggesting for a minute that anybody wanted anybody to be murdered or to be killed. I'm not saying that. In fact, I don't believe that. But do you think that a decision was made along the line to expedite the tearing down of these buildings by allowing unsafe material be placed on the buildings. Maybe some night one of them will catch fire. No problem. We'll get all the people out and then we will expedite the process of ripping the buildings down. Or am I just an old conspiracy theorist, Michael?
Well, you're not a conspiracy theorist, but I think on this occasion you're not quite on the right path. Firstly, we're not quite sure who took the decision to put flammable cladding on the buildings. We're not sure who knew what about that, so I would reserve judgment on that. The key thing about Grenfell is that there was an ISIS bomb-making cell there, and they were storing TATP explosive in a freezer, which is absolutely unsuited to the task. The TATP cooked off, and they blew the building up. And the fire alarms, such as they were, the fire protection, such as it was not designed to deal with high explosive being stored in the flat. Had there been no high explosive, there would have been no fire. So the cause of the fire is the explosion of the TATP, unstable TATP cooking off, almost certainly because the freezer failed, almost certainly because it wasn't designed. You don't put a heat generator in a domestic freezer. That's just idiocy.
Hang on a second. I just want to double down on this because I didn't hear you right the first time. You believe the fire started at Grenfell because jihadists were trying to make a bomb and they were using a fridge.
Yes, there was a bomb. Ah, you see, that's only come out in my VT columns. There were a bunch of jihadis in Grenfell Tower. There was an ISIS bomb-making cell.
Proof, my friend. Where's the proof of this? Where's the proof that they were making bombs there?
Well, I stand by my sources. My intelligence is sound on this, I'm sure.
Right. Now, I don't doubt that you believe that, but there is no way the national newspapers wouldn't have picked this up. No way.
National newspapers already know it, but the national newspapers are running for cover. So are the government. The government are running for cover. The death toll is probably somewhere between 200 and 300. Nobody's prepared to give an accurate figure of how many people came out of the building and how many people were rehoused and how many people were in the building. It looks as though there were between 500 and 600 in the building, probably closer to 600.
Right, hang on a second. You're going to stay with me for 5 minutes. That's your fault now. You could be sitting down watching cricket highlights, but it's your own fault.
There are no cricket highlights on.
Is there not? There's nothing on tonight. I thought there might be. This is your fault. Hang on a second now, because I haven't heard any of this. You're telling me that there was a jihadi cell at Grenfell, and they were inadvertently responsible for starting the fire. Without giving away your sources, how do your sources know this? How do they know this?
Well, we know there was an explosion. We know that the official version of events, which is that a hot point fridge freezer made in Poland breaks down and catches fire, does not explain the loss of the building. It can't. An ordinary domestic fire, a fire in a domestic appliance caused by a short circuit or some sort of electrical failure, would be contained within that flat. It wouldn't spread to other flats because it's a reinforced concrete building. Each flat is essentially fireproof, but it's only fireproof. It's not bombproof. The buildings are not proofed against high explosives. You've got to analyze how the fire gets from inside the building to outside the building, because it clearly goes up the exterior of the building through the flammable cladding and also through the natural gas pipes.
But isn't it a massive stretch to think that there was a jihadi bomb-making factory there? I mean,
it's not so much a stretch. There was clearly an explosion. Only an explosion can count for the rapid spread of the fire and the fire getting outside the flat, windows being blown out. Only an explosion can account for that. So there was clearly an explosion. That's not a stretch. That's what happened. We know there were asylum seekers being housed in the building. We certainly know there's a proven connection to Syria. There's a proven connection to Egypt, both of which are countries with significant ISIS activity. And we know that asylum is the process by which most foreign jihadis get into the UK or get into any Western state. But they don't get through the normal immigration processes. They come in without ID cards and they apply for asylum. So we know the whole asylum process is fraught with peril for this country in terms of national security. We know there were asylum seekers in the building. We know there were Middle Eastern nationals in the building, dual nationals in the building, Middle Eastern nationals in the building. we know there was an ISIS cell operating in the building. We know there's an ISIS campaign of terrorism on at the moment that linked to Brexit. We know that ISIS are controlled from Germany. We know the Germans are desperate to stop Brexit. And we know that there was a major public event coming up a couple of days after Grenfell Tower blew up, and that was the Trooping of Colour.
But how was an ISIS cell?
It's a very large stretch.
Yeah. You say it's not a large stretch, but how could an ISIS cell operate from within Grenfell Tower, unmolested by the intelligence agencies?
Oh, easy. Well, this is the problem. GO2, until we shut down GO2, we can't deal with ISIS. GO2, the German operation in London, have penetrated MI5, have penetrated MI6. I mean, GO2 is run from Vauxhall Cross. It's run from a section of MI6 headquarters. So MI5 are limited in their ability to deal with jihadis because they've got GO2 all over them. And GO2 are all over the Cabinet Office, and the MI5 report to the Joint Intelligence Committee, which in turn is controlled and subverted, thoroughly subverted by the Cabinet Office.
Would you say your source on this is unimpeachable, Michael? Are we talking about somebody, you know, nice?
We're talking multiple sources, including the bomb disposal sources.
Multiple sources working for British intelligence today.
Multiple sources, independent, but we're talking army bomb explosive experts. We're talking, we're talking deep sources.
And you're telling me
I've been up to London a few times since Grenfell, and I've been making inquiries.
And you're telling me the British tabloid media are aware of the belief that it was an ISIS team, and yet they are running scared from the story or not publishing. I find hard to believe. You see. Because this is the scoop of the century right now, you know.
Yeah, but they're running scared. They also got the huge problem that they won't report it until they get multiple sources confirming it to them. And of course, their own sources are not confirming it to them. They're probably not denying it. But they probably haven't got enough to justify going to the story journalistically. But they could, if they had the guts, they could simply call me at a TV studio and ask me about my column on weapons today, because that's published.
And their reason, sorry, Michael, and their reason for not going with the story is because the public are on, they're on edge, or they're angry enough already with what's happened, or what?
Well, it's a combination of factors. You've got heavy German penetration of the companies which control most of our major newspapers. So you've got, the newspapers are not particularly independent. You've got them narrow, you've got a concentration of ownership of newspapers. The BBC are not independent. They report to the Cabinet Office. There are all sorts of failings of the mainstream media that many of your listeners will be familiar with. It's not independent, and it's not particularly professional. It lacks guts. And this is precisely the sort of story that they won't cover. Even if they had sources willing to go on the record with them, or sources off the record, but multiple sources sufficient to justify them in terms of journalistic ethics.
I just can't imagine, Michael. I can't imagine the Daily Mail not publishing that. If they knew about it.
I can imagine the Daily Mail not publishing it. I can well imagine the Daily Mail not publishing it. The Daily Mail for years suppressed the fact that Stephen Lawrence was a drug trafficker. He was involved in drug dealing. That's why he got stabbed. There was a dispute about drugs. He was busting in on somebody else's patch. That's what Stephen Lawrence meant was all about. You know, the Daily Mail dressed it up as pure white on black racism, which was maybe an element of that, but it wasn't racism. It was drugs.
I don't know enough about that, to be honest. I've never known too much about Stephen Lawrence.
I'm surprised that the Daily Mail is sitting on it. The Daily Mail has sat on an awful lot of stuff.
Listen, I look forward to reading your article about this. On Veterans Today, I'll share it with
her. It's not published. Yeah, it's been out. It came out 2 weeks ago.
I didn't see it. How interesting.
I've done two columns on Grenfell Towers.
Michael, that's a bombshell, no pun intended, for a lot of our listeners. I'm getting tweeted, absolutely viral tweets on this coming in from people. Thanks for talking to us about Jersey and for that on Grenfell as well. It's always a pleasure. Go to veteranstoday.com to find out more about Michael. Read Spy Hunter. It's an amazing book. It really is. I can't recommend it highly enough. Michael, it's always great to have you on. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Lovely. Thank you, Richard.
Look after yourself, and thanks for the extra time. Michael Shrimpton on the line to us there from his home. He's in the West Country. Michael, exactly 5 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I'm going to read some of your tweets. We'll have a chat with Jamie. And time permitting, we will, of course, open the phone lines as well. I'm sure you've got plenty to say about Jersey and about the claims made by the intelligence expert Michael Shrimpton that the fridge, the hot point fridge in the flat in Grenfell Tower that we were told was faulty and caused that fire was in fact being used to store bomb-making equipment by an ISIS cell. Extraordinary claims on this edition of the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now. Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
And we're broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester as well as richieallen.co.uk and TuneIn Radio. And this is an opportunity as well to give a plug to the Truth Seeker app. There's the Truth Seeker app. Love those guys. Marvellous job they do. The Truth Seeker app can be ordered from the App Store. And it's free. And when you download it, when everybody puts a podcast out there, pretty much everybody, James Corbett, InfoWars, Rivero, all these stalwarts of the independent media, it automatically uploads to your phone. Doesn't cost you a penny. Truth Seeker app. We like it. I think David's video cast goes on there as well in the week. I think that was all organised some time ago. Right, 7 minutes past the hour before we... I'm going to have some music in a second, then we'll have Jamie. Before we do that, I'm going to read some tweets. Nobody likes what Michael had to say about Grenfell Tower. Clarence tweets, Shrimpton has truly discredited himself on Grenfell and Stephen Lawrence accusations. Shameful. Now, Clarence, the reason I didn't take Michael on... on the claims he made about Stephen Lawrence are, shamefully, I've never known much about the Stephen Lawrence case. I've never looked into it. I've never known much about it. So that's the only reason. So I just don't know. But you're saying that he's absolutely wrong about Stephen Lawrence. And of course, we'll read out those comments as well. Fluffles tweets, is this man for fucking real? Is he on sleepers? FFS. It's terror. Says Fluffles. Johnny tweets, my best mate is a fireman and knows every fireman at Grenfell. That fridge fire was put out, says Johnny. What are the implications of that, Johnny? That's an interesting one. It means that the fire might have started somewhere else. Is that what you're saying? Or it was spread somewhere else? Spirit Samba tweets, why would the MSN run from the story? Good question. I'd love to know. This would be a great way of deflecting blame from others. It doesn't make sense, Richie. Exactly, Spirit. Exactly. Because we're looking at the regeneration and gentrification and social cleansing. To blame it on an ISIS cell would be a wonderful thing for the establishment to do. So I agree. I will say this though, I've known Michael a long time. He's no idiot. I know people get pissed off with him mentioning the Germans. But he means Frankfurt Rothschilds when he says Germans. He really does. Mark tweets, the German SS running a jihadi cell from Grenfell Towers... WTF, a bomb exploding would have been heard and the blast would be hard to miss. But the bomb didn't necessarily have to be assembled. Parts of the bomb, something could have blown up or exploded. You know? Hi to Martin. Hi to Yvonne. Hi to William, who says, I heard somewhere the fire was started by a fridge. Maybe this was a smart fridge, he says. Jane tweets, Shrimpton is a joke. ISIS and Syria, and who supports and funded ISIS? Can't listen to any more of this nonsense. Russia next, says Jane. Jane, we should always listen to people we disagree with. We should never just say, I'm not listening because I disagree with them. Listen, because you never know. Faisal tweets, the rapid spread of the fire is anomalous, but indicates flammable insulation rather than an explosion, says Faisal. And one of our listeners tweeted, come again, said the Virgin Mary. It certainly caught me out that I didn't read that particular article, and I nearly missed it. Not because I wasn't listening to Michael, but did he really say that a bomb was made by an ISIS cell? But I do know that he is connected up to the gills to the intelligence agencies here, and he has had a lot of very close contacts at these agencies over the years. And somebody is telling Michael Shrimpton, maybe somebody's putting his leg, it's possible, but somebody is telling him that an ISIS cell were operating out of Grenfell. They were storing bomb-making and explosive equipment in a fridge, and it went off, and that led to the fire. He's being told that. Whether we believe him or not is another thing. Some music. When we come back, Jamie Ike, and if there's time, we'll open the phone lines. How about that? Can't go wrong with it. Check out davidike.com/headlines. Most of what we talk about on this programme covered in depth there. Fab Radio 2 and richieallen.co.uk. This is Dolores O'Riordan, God Lover and the Cranberries. And this is called Dreams on the Richie Allen Show in association with davidike.com. The time is 11 minutes past the hour. Jamie Ike joins me in exactly 3 minutes' time. It's the 4th of July in the United States of America. I suppose it's the 4th of July everywhere. Happy Independence Day to our American friends. We have many on this programme and, of course, David is a household name in the States, very well known across the US, of course, as well. All the best from DavidIke.com and all the team at DavidIke.com if you're celebrating Independence Day. Great stuff. Right. Jamie Ike popped up to see me today, the reason being that later in the summer we're going to do a Friday evening phone-in show. When I say we, I'm going to have nothing to do with it. Jamie's going to be in charge. He'll be taking your calls on subjects that he might define during the day. It might be an open session as well. You know, Jamie, of course, he's David Icke's youngest. Yes, he is. His youngest son, his youngest child. But he works, of course, very closely with his father. And he's done an amazing job producing the Worldwide Wake-Up Tour, which thus far has been a massive success wherever it's been. And it continues later this year and into 2018 as well. He produces it, keeps it on the road. An enormous undertaking, really, when you think about it. And does lots more besides. Let's welcome to the programme, not for the first time, our first ever studio guest. Do you realise that, Jamie Ike? Welcome. You are, and I put the wrong fader up, didn't I, like an idiot. You are the first guy to do an interview with me in this studio.
I'm honoured.
Well, you shouldn't be honoured. Now, we're hearing sirens in the background. And we're hearing actuality and noise. Because of the cramped quarters in the studio, we've decided to effectively do this outdoors by opening up all the windows and everything. So you might hear a bit of noise. It's been an incredible year, hasn't it? It's been an amazing year for you and for everybody at, you know, at DavidIke.com and the tour. Tell us how it's been, Jay.
Yeah, it's been incredible. It's very different to last year. Last year we started in July. Actually, basically a year ago today we were in Perth, Australia, ahead of the five dates there. Whereas this year we started from 14th of January. We had our first show in Manchester, then off to Dublin. We've attacked the Balkans quite a lot this year in Serbia, Slovenia, Croatia, and Iceland as well. So it's been a more intense year because we've started earlier. There's not really been a break, and alongside that, David's been writing a new book as well, which will come out later in the year. So for him, it's been a very busy year. For me, it's been pretty busy, but for him, it's been a very intense year, and I'm sure he's looking forward to a rest later in the year.
No doubt he is. Now, organising something like the Worldwide Wake Up Tour, if I say it right, is an enormous undertaking, and one of the things I was fascinated by was getting people to translate for people wearing headsets at some of the gigs in Eastern Europe, and they were doing that, listening to David and translating it at the same time. That was logistically amazing, right?
Oh, I can't deal with it, how they do it. How they hear one thing in English and speak in another language at the same time into headphones for people to hear. It's amazing because you've got... It's not just as simple as someone translates what I'm saying now. It's not easy, but it's much more simple than what they have to do for our show, because there's a visual aspect to it as well with the slides. When David's reading something out or when he's not reading something out, they have to then translate what's on that slide to the audience as well. So they've got to be looking at their screen as what's on it. They've got to be listening to what he's saying and translating that all at the same time. It's incredible. And we had a show at the back end of last year in Estonia where we had three translation booths and it was being translated into Estonian, Russian and Finnish. So you had a team of, I believe, 25 translators over three different languages for 12 hours.
So, and they managed it. They did it and did it properly, right?
They did, yeah. It's interesting. We have, when David does, if I use the Serbia, for example, when we were over there, we have a translator that comes around with us for the week. So when David does interviews on radio and television, they'll translate what he's saying live on air. So you kind of get a feed for how good the translation is. That's kind of our only reference to how good the translation is. When the show's going, they'll turn and say, yep, translation's very good at the moment. Or it's not so good. That's our only kind of way of knowing how good it is, and they're spot on. When you tell a joke, that's our way of measuring it. How long till the laugh comes, and it's instant. It's incredible. I can't grasp how they do it. It's an unbelievable talent.
You've had a bit of resistance as well, it must be said. At one of the events recently, you had to find a venue, pretty much at the 11th hour. That was an extraordinary thing. I remember watching that. From here, from a distance, watching what was going on. What happened?
That was in Belgrade a few weeks ago. It was the last show we did. We had a show booked at a place called the Sava Centre, which is hosted some of the G summits years ago, I believe, and that's what it was built for. And it's the most prestigious venue in Belgrade. It's where all the concerts are. And yeah, on the Thursday, the organizer over there came in and said, "I've had to move it to this new venue that we've had to find because they've demanded, I think it was something like €10,000 in cash within the next 3 hours. Otherwise, they're going to pull the show." And
that was the shakedown, right?
Oh, it was a bribe and an absolute bribe. And we found out afterwards that we're not the only company that's been done to. And as it turns out, the CEO is an outgoing CEO who only had about 3 months of his tenure in charge left. And I'm sure that would have gone into his pocket and that would have been his retirement present, because we found out from various people that there's been a couple of other occasions that's happened to other promoters and other events. So it's not just us, which is a positive, because it means our event wasn't targeted specifically, but it just shows that stuff like that does go on, and it's disgusting.
What did you do, Jay, when you're being told, listen, the venue is being pulled? What did you do?
Well, fortunately, by the time we found out, it was already sorted. In that country, we had a promoter on the ground that was working with us, and by the time we found out that had happened, it was, this has happened, but we've already got another venue. So it was panic and jubilation in a split second, because it was sorted by the time we found out. And it actually was very successful. It was amazing, really. They turned this vast warehouse that had absolutely nothing in it into a really cool theatre-style show, and it was perfect. They could only get hold of a certain amount of chairs, which was the exact how many seats we'd sold, so it was absolutely perfect.
Incredible.
Synchronicity. It was one of those that was written in the stars. It was meant to be, it meant to happen, and it worked very, very well.
By the way, I'm aware there is a slight issue with my microphone, because there is a crossed wire somewhere. It's been a while since we've used the extra microphones in the studio. We've got the best, we've pretty much got the best kit that you could have, but there is something amiss there. I'll get Paul Ripley onto it. But that's okay, we'll persevere for a couple of minutes. You're going to come and do a phone-in programme on Fridays, Jay. What are you going to do with it?
Well, I'm really excited about it. I mean, use the example of sport. You see crowds and people getting very passionate about things, and you see a lot of memes on the internet that say, if only people got this passionate about something that mattered. And I'm an avid listener of Talk Sport when I drive. I love listening to what people are saying about sport. I'm a big sports fan, but it's in perspective. Yet you hear the calls of some people come in, how passionate, how angry, how aggressive they're getting about things that are going on about their clubs or players that are going to sign here, sign there, or not all that. And I just thought, how amazing would it be if we had a show where people could phone in and get that passionate about something that actually matters? And the beauty of the setup you've got here with internet radio is it can be anywhere in the world. And yeah, I mean, the topic, we'd probably, if there's a very topical issue that's happened in that week, then we'll have the first half an hour on that. But it's generally just going to be open up the phones, phone in whatever you want to say.
Basically, the listener sets the agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure we'll start the show and thinking it's going to go in one direction and it'll end up in a completely different one. But no, it's very, very exciting. We're going to start with just doing it once a month. The first one on the 18th of August. And then we'll do that till the end of the year and see what the response is like, see what the listeners are like, and see the interaction. If it's something that we think we could do weekly, we will in the new year.
Sounds great, Jay. I'm going to take a few phone calls from listeners in a few minutes, actually, and you'll be observing keenly what's going on there. Before I do that, though, and take some music, tell us about three special events that are planned for the launch of David's forthcoming book, Three Events in Three Cities in the UK. Tell us about that.
Yeah, as I said earlier, he's been writing a book over the summer, so he's been very busy on that. And that is due for release on Saturday, the 18th of November. We have three shows in the week leading up to that. One in Edinburgh on Monday the 13th, London on Wednesday the 15th, and right here in Manchester on Friday the 17th. They are gala, well, not gala, but they're dinners, evening with shows, of which obviously in the Manchester and London show, so you'll be interviewing David yourself. In Scotland, we've got comic book writer Mark Miller.
Lovely.
He's going to be interviewing David, and yeah, it's going to be really cool. People are going to have an opportunity to get hold of the book before it goes on general release.
And Edinburgh has sold out, I believe.
It has, yeah, that sold very, very quickly. We've had, ever since the tour, the Worldwide Wake Up tour started, we've had constant requests to go up to Scotland, and it's not quite worked out. So as soon as that went on sale, it went very, very quickly, yeah.
Brilliant. So where people looking to buy tickets for Manchester or London, where do they need to go then?
They're available at davidikestore.com, and yeah.
Thanks for coming up, mate. It's really good to see you.
Yeah, you too. It's nice to be your first guest in your studio.
Yeah, you are the absolute first one. Thanks, Jamie. That was the exceptional Jamie Icke there, who's going to stay with me while we take a few phone calls. He's going to observe what's going on. There isn't a lot to this, of course, but you do need to have a look at it. We'll take some calls then. The way to reach me on Skype is to Skype Chat with Richie. That's Chat with Richie. Couldn't be any simpler. To phone the programme in the UK, it is 0161 408 2017. I had to think about that because it's a couple of numbers. 0161 408 2017. Okay, if you're outside the UK, it's +44 161 408 2017. But you can Skype chat with Richie. I've never done it as late as this, so I'm at your mercy. We'll see how it goes. 25 minutes past the hour. Let's get some Dandy Warhols. Yeah, I used to love this. Bohemian Like You on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Tuesday, July the 4th, 2017. This is a tune and a half. This from sometime around the year 2000, I remember. We've got a phone call already. Hold your horses. I'll take that call in a second after some music. And we'll try and get as many as we can in between now and the top of the hour. Jersey, whatever, you set the agenda.
You've got a great car. Yeah, what's wrong with it today? I used to have one too. Maybe you'll come and have a look. I really love your hairdo, yeah. I'm glad you like mine too. See, we're looking pretty cool. Get ya.
Dandy Warhols, Bohemian Like You. We have a caller on line one. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who are you and where
Hello,
are you
Richie.
Calling from?
My name's Rob. I live on the Wirral. We've spoken before briefly.
Oh, we have, Rob. Some time ago, you're in the Wirral. Yes, of course. Welcome back. It's been a while. Nice to hear from you. What would you like to say? The floor is yours. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I'd just like to take issue with Shrimpton. He bangs on about GO2 as though it's some sort of as though it's somehow there. No one but him gets it. Now I take his word seriously. I've done my own research, looked at GO2. I can't find any evidence. I know where you're coming from when you say linked it to Rothschilds, but. He's very bold about it, and I'd love to get hold of him and just ask him the question, where is this coming from? Because, quite frankly, all the research I've done, it doesn't link to GO2 and the Germans. So that's my question to Michael Shrimpton, if he's still listening.
Well, do you know, we've argued so many times over the years, Michael and myself, because I believe, Rob, he explicitly means the Frankfurt Rothschild cabal. But he won't say the Rothschilds.
Whether
he fears being, accused of anti-Semitism or whatever. But I'm convinced he means the Rothschilds. Let me ask you this, and listen, I'm glad that we have a dissenting voice. I did say on Twitter, most people who tweeted us were saying they didn't buy what Michael was saying. I like him because he's been right about so many things. But we love a good argument. We love a good debate on this program. Tell me this: what he said about Grenfell. was staggering, really. And I'm surprised that nobody pointed me in the direction of his Veterans Today article 2 weeks ago. But the suggestion that an ISIS cell were making bombs may have inadvertently caused the fire at Grenfell. What did you think of that, Rob?
Well, this is the remarkable thing about Shrimpton, and I'm going to endeavour to do my level best, and I'm not incapable of my own degree of research. I do know people in the London area, and I'm going to use that to basically inquire, has that got any legs? If it has, Shrimpton's okay. If it hasn't, then, right, that's it. You know, give me his phone number because I always email address. But give me 2 weeks. Give me 2 weeks, and I will establish that in my own mind's eye. But I'll certainly take issue with Michael Shrimpton over that.
I find it hard to believe, Rob. I find it hard to believe that a tabloid newspaper would know that the intelligence agencies suspected an ISIS plot was was festering at Grenfell, and that the tabloid wouldn't run with that. I find that very hard to countenance, to be honest. I can't get my head round that.
Well, I think this is where Michael Shrimpton comes with some extraordinary stuff, and I'll be perfectly frank, a lot of what he says, I think, has credence. I mean, it's so out there. It's almost like Harry Potter or something, but in the intelligence manner. Somebody says, I'm pretty sure it's going to be true, and it doesn't strike me as being beyond the realms of possibility. And you know as well as I, most of the people listening do, that... there are nefarious elements that are operating for nefarious gains. So I don't know. I need to research what Michael Shrimpton had to say about Grenfell Tower, and I intend to do that. And if it's okay with you, I'll email you or something, and we'll give you
my... Why not? Why not? Listen, mate, I'm going to try and get as many calls as I can in.
Yeah, man. Yeah, code. No problem.
Rob, thanks very much for that. Great to hear from you on the Wirral there.
Yeah, pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
God bless, mate. Cheers. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for that. That was Rob in the Wirral, not a million miles away. I recognised the 0151 number there. I thought he was in Liverpool. What do you think of what Michael Shrimpton had to say about Grenfell Tower? You might agree, you might disagree. What do you think about transgender parents not choosing a gender for their baby until such time as the baby decides what it is or what it isn't? We might talk about that. We can talk about anything. Got another call coming in. Caller, you're live. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome. Right, you can switch me off in the background there for a start.
Trying to speak with Richard Allen, please.
Yes, you're speaking with Richie. You're live. You got to turn me off in the background there. Who am I speaking with?
I'm off in the background now. Yeah.
Brilliant stuff. Who am I talking to?
My name is Ian, and I'm from London, Muswell Hill. And what I want to talk about is how can we get people to understand what's really going on? It's the difficulty of everything. We can love Michael Shrimpton and his version of events contrast with what the official story is. That kind of stuff, you know.
You're saying, Ian, that it's difficult to take this information to somebody else, basically, to somebody who doesn't understand it or hasn't heard it.
Yeah. That is basically it. How do we get across to other people? Things like what the guest earlier, Michael Shrimpton, was talking about, and the real truth. I know someone from years ago who lived in Jersey. She's a middle-aged woman now, and she's living about a mile from me. She talked about Jersey and the boats coming in and boats coming out. She can identify herself, some of them, but she won't talk about it. She's under deep, deep therapy for her experiences because she wasn't a victim of Ted Hughes. She was a victim of her...
Don't name anybody, Ian, don't name anybody. Just in case you're thinking of naming anybody who might be alive, don't do that. I'll be sued and we'll be kicked off the air.
And
David will kill me.
No.
I don't mean to insult you.
All I'm asking is, we're hearing all these stories on the alternative media and,
Ian, do me a favour. Tell me a little. Stay with me a minute. I'm very interested in what you have to say. So your neighbour, she's obviously we're not going to name her. She's a middle-aged lady, and when she was a child, she was sent to Jersey. Is that right? Was she sent to Jersey from London?
No. She was living in Jersey.
Oh, she was living in Jersey.
Abusive father-in-law, as a young girl, was running around Jersey, and she used to see boys being taken off and on the boat, and she won't talk about it, but she said it was sometimes less boys coming off than what going on.
Less boys coming back. So this lady was being abused at home. She was taken out of the home for her safety, but God love her, she was then sent to this house of horrors in Jersey.
She wasn't taken out of her home for her own safety. She was part of it.
She
was part of the whole deal. And she used to run away from her father-in-law, like children do, you know, when they're young. They run around. And then she saw people coming off the boats, picking children up from the ground, and then putting them back on again.
How old would she be now, Ian?
Julia, she is. She's a twin sister of someone on the Isle of Jersey when they were growing up together. I think she's around. I never liked her. When I met her, I didn't ask her exact age.
I
think she was mid 40s, going on 50s.
Yeah, I'm just interested in, you know, what era would she have been in the home there. And she's been traumatised to the point where she it's affected her very deeply. And she said that boys went on boats and less boys returned than actually went out.
Yeah. She's seen all that. To her, that was normal.
What do you think of that, Ian? I mean, what do you think of living in a world where that can happen to children?
I don't know. Look, I'll be honest with you. I'm quite new to this. I knew in the 80s something was wrong with the world, okay? And then about 4 years ago, I got onto internet broadband at home. Before that, I was working in hi-fi. And when I was working in hi-fi, I didn't care. I just had to make a living. My wife, my girlfriend, after my wife, and so on. So, in a nutshell, are you still there?
I'm listening to you, Ian. Go ahead.
Yeah. In a nutshell, I started to find out about how I had suspicions for a long, long time. The world is not right. And then when I started to think more deeply about it, I had no reason to. I was in a relationship, I was happy. And later on, after a few mishaps in my life, nothing to do with the mishaps, by the way, you know, like falling out, becoming widowed, and so on. But... you start thinking about things, and I realised 100% there was something not right. And a friend told me, hang on, have you looked at this? And I thought, what? And he said, 9/11. And I said, yes, I thought that was very strange from the day I first thought it. and I started to research.
So this led to you reading about other things and exploring other things, and it changed your philosophy, Ian, on the way things work.
It's life-changing, honestly.
Listen, Ian, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I've got calls coming in. I've not got much time left in the programme. Thanks for telling us about your friend and Jersey. It's important stuff that I really appreciate it. Thanks for listening to the programme, and thanks for taking the time to call
us. Thank you so much. I didn't know I was talking live.
Yeah, you're on live. Yeah, you can't go back now. There's no change.
I was being honest.
Listen, you didn't say anything out of place or out of turn, my friend. You did very well. Thank you, Ian. Lovely to hear from you.
Thank you so much.
Look after yourself.
Bless you.
God bless. Bye for now. Lovely Ian on the line to us there from London. And Ian said that a neighbour of his was on the island and was incarcerated. It's the only thing to say, really. You know, she ran away from home, from an abusive home. Running away from an abusive home was enough to get her thrown into Haute de la Garenne, where she witnessed unspeakable things. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com. 19 minutes to the top of the hour. You can chat, you can Skype chat with Richie. You can email richie@richieallen.co.uk if you don't want to come on the air. Or you can phone 0161 408 2017. That's 2017. 0161 408 2017. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who's calling?
Hi, Richie. This is Stephen again, phoning from Belfast.
Stephen.
I'm not going to eat into your time.
No, mate, go ahead. I'm going to try and get through as many calls as I can, but go ahead, Stephen. Be as brief as you can.
I'll be very, 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 very short and to the point. I was listening to Richard Gage last night, the architect who explored, you know, the controlled demolition of the towers.
Yes.
But I want to elaborate on what you were saying earlier on, the start of your show, about this whole system, where everything's becoming, you know, non-binary entity beings, and this systematic drip feeding of the public into this transhumanism agenda, and how this is actually, believe it or not, inextricably linked to what happened September 11th, which is bringing this into this year. And once people understand that September 11th wasn't just a physical occurrence, which it was, there was a lot of money made that day, inside trading, etc., a lot of criminals on Wall Street. But there was a satanic element to it. And this was the thing that fascinated me to write my book, as I told you before, months ago. I've nearly finished it now, Richie, and I had to put the extra editions onto the book because of Trump. I was looking at Trump very carefully in his relationship to Israel, and I'm like, can't finish the book just yet until I look at Trump properly. But now I've worked him out and who he is, what his role is in this new world order agenda. It's actually quite terrifying, actually, when you look at it.
You know, it's interesting you mention the insider trading. I mean, when I discovered this to be true, when I discovered that millions upon millions of dollars are made by put options being placed on the stock of American Airlines falling, and that those, those were very anomalous, they were very unusual, and in fact, they were 10 or 15 times greater in terms of the volume of those trades than you would expect on any other given time, it became apparent that a lot of people knew what was going to happen. A lot of people. It was almost like Absolutely. An open secret that it was going to happen, right?
Absolutely. It was a premeditated mass murder, but it was also a satanic mass mega ritual. And I've got proof to back it up, that it definitely was a satanic ritual. I've got absolute proof.
I look forward to you sending me the completed manuscript when it's done, Stephen. Sincerely, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I hope I'm wrong when I said last night that we could end up talking about September the 11th the way that we talk about JFK now. 40 years could just fly by and we could still be having these bloody conversations, you know?
I don't see it that length of time, Richie, to be honest. I think we're moving into a World War III scenario. As I told you before, it's going to be precipitated by world false peace. This is going to end up in misery.
We have the media at the moment cheerleading for some sort of conflict in the Far East. Don't we? We have the media, you know, triumphantly. I mean, Trump is such a complete, you know, mind. I don't want to say, I'll say mind fuck, because that's what it is.
Yes.
Because with Trump, you have Trump saying, oh, the media is all against me. They're not actually all against him, the media. In fact, they're not against him. When he tweets out about, you know, the Chinese and the Japanese should do something about North Korea, what we've seen today is the media bring on experts to back him up. The media bring people on to say that's actually a good idea. Yeah, the Chinese and the Japanese should push North Korea to do something which could cause a war between the North and the South. And before you know it, it's absolute mayhem over there. So I see that.
You can see this. It's predictive programming to bring in their order out of chaos. But to get back to your point at the start of the show about, you know, this androgynous agenda, you know, non-binary entities, etc., gender fluidity and Zs and etc., pronouns being exchanged and semantic gymnastics being exchanged over the mainstream media, Mockingbird.
Yeah.
The 911 agenda was the bringing down of the two pillars of Jochem and Boaz. It was a satanic ritual. It was the reverse engineering of what happened in the Temple of Solomon, where 666 talents of gold were brought each year to the ancient Temple of Solomon. So there's where you see the 666. But even the numerical code, Richie, the planes that went into the buildings, these are a satanic initiation codes. There's been books written about this. There's been seminars on it. There's an ex-Satanist. I'm not going to eat any more of your time. But basically, that fact, the satanic ritual, symbolized the birth of the new age, or the golden age, or the golden dawn of destiny. And I've been watching high-ranking Freemasons going over to Turkey in the last few months. The Vatican know about this. They're aligned to it. And they want to build this temple, but this temple will be a Luciferian temple. And they are planning to do this. It is completely Luciferian.
Get that,
the transhuman agenda is part of it.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I mean, people like Michael, who was on in the first hour, we unfortunately live in an echo chamber. And we have audiences that, and it's a very risky thing to talk about your own audience, because you can end up losing your audience and you can get into trouble. I think that broadly, people who listen to this program, who come through davidicke.com, are broadly inquisitive, and they don't mind their own viewpoint being challenged. But sadly, yourself included, and me, I'm the same, I don't mind my viewpoint being challenged. But sadly, within the so-called independent media, largely, most people don't like that viewpoint being challenged. And when Michael comes on, and Michael says he doesn't really see the satanic element of child abuse. Now, he says that because he's telling the truth. He doesn't see it. Yeah. But unfortunately, that makes him a Zio shill, a establishment paedophile protector, and all this fucking garbage, which drives me absolutely mad. He doesn't see it. Fair enough. You know, fair enough, he doesn't see it. But he's done some great work over the years on paedophilia, on Heath, on Savile, and others. But that's this is the echo chamber we live in. You know, I've talked about, you know, I've had people on the program in the past who talked about symbolism and satanic numerology and stuff like that. And I know that there's going to be a tirade of abuse at the end of it from people, oh, this is all bollocks and this doesn't do any good and this doesn't help get the message out there. But as I said to Michael Shrimpton earlier on, what difference does it make? If it's true, it has to be talked about. Whether it gets the message out there or not doesn't matter. If you start to self-censor, oh, geez, I won't talk about what Stephen is talking about because if I do, I look like a maniac. Well, then you're censoring yourself, right, Stephen?
Well, the bottom line is I have absolutely nothing to be afraid of. You know, I'm a professing Christian. A lot of people who are supposedly Christians around me are saying, why are you listening to David Icke? I'm like, what are you talking about? That guy is a genius.
Listen to everybody.
He's worked out this. He's worked out the system. And just because he doesn't have the same belief system as me, it doesn't mean the man isn't spiritual. Now, we may have different conclusions about the universe, etc. But when it comes to crime investigation and exposition of this geopolitical covert agenda, David Icke is right up there. He's right at the top.
Well, you don't... you're not an identitarian... You don't see the world from the point of view I'm a Christian or I'm from Belfast or I'm whatever. This is the problem, you see. So you have people, we invite people on the program and they say, I'm not coming on, Richie Allen, because I heard you talking about Israel on that show that you did when you talked about the creation of Israel. And I'm anti-racist, so I'm not coming on your program. So immediately you see the world from the point of view of you're a virtuous anti-racist. This is my starting point. I see the world from here. So you have no chance. You have no chance. You can't identify yourself as anything. See the world from open-mindedness, from a completely open point of view. Go ahead, Stephen.
It's like Jared Salen said in your show one time. You know, it goes back to the banksters on Wall Street. these inside traders, these profiteers from blood. Christ, the only time he lost his temper was with the money changers in the temple. Now, whether you want to believe that physically, literally, or symbolically, the point remains the same. Corruption at this level, which is money-led, has led to the slaughter of innocents all over the world, and it's getting worse by the second. And it is, I'm not being a scaremonger, but what I'll say is this. There's more to be agreed upon with David and myself and people like David. And I could easily sit down with David and have a discussion. It wouldn't be a debate, it would be a discussion, because I've learned a lot from David's teachings as well. But I will say this, and I'll leave it in this. I have proof that September 11th was a satanic attack. I have proof since September 11th and what's happening right now to take us right into this September. It's absolutely the astronomical alignment, the numerical code, the Kabbalah, the Hermetic principle in September 11th. David has touched on all this.
Saturn, the planet
Saturn. But what about the Temple of Solomon, the Building 7, the Solomon Building, the 47-story tower?
Which sadly most people don't even know fell down. This is the thing where Richard Gage said yesterday, we're still in this ridiculous reality where the majority of people who heard about September 11 still don't know a third tower fell on that day. Stephen, get that book published, mate. Get it to me.
I will, sir.
So I can
will.
Read
I'll
it.
Give it over to you.
And then we'll get you on to talk about it. We'll give you a good hour on it. How about that?
Okay, you keep up the good work, sir, and say hello to Jamie for me and David.
Will indeed, mate. Thanks for that, Stephen.
Okay. God bless.
Cheers,
all
buddy.
Best,
bye for now. Stephen on the line from Belfast. He was in touch with us, Stephen, about 8 or 9 months ago. He's writing a book about what he was just talking about there. We'll get him on the program when that book is out. It's 9 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm going to take a quick break. There is time, probably, for one quick call. That's been all right, hasn't it? Thrown together at the last minute. Quick break, back in a minute. One more call, probably. If not, we'll wrap up Tuesday's Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structure and application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back. We've time for one more call. It's coming from the Republic of Ireland, God's country. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who are you? Are they gone? Have they hung up on me? They have. They might just have hung up on me. Ah, be Jesus. They're ringing again. There you go. Hang on a second now. They must have got tired of waiting during the ad break. They must have thought I'm going to use up all my credit. Caller, welcome from the Republic of Ireland. Who am I speaking with?
Richie Allen. Am I on?
You are. Who am I speaking with?
It's hard to call him.
Welcome, mate. How are you? Listen, you've got about 3 minutes, so in 3 minutes only. So make your point as quick as you can. Go ahead.
I'm on a mob, but really quickly, I was wondering, did Stephen know that September the 11th is the Feast of the Annunciation, or at least the date that's associated with the Annunciation? Secondly, Michael Shrimpton, he's an amazing sort of chap. I know he said he met Keith Ledger after Keith Ledger was dead. That's interesting. And also, he, on a recent interview with Project Camelot after Westminster, he said he signed off with Audrey and said, "Oh, I'll see you on Stockholm Bridge." And then only a week or two later, Stockholm Bridge was hit. So I do often think about that as well. And then very quickly, I'm 48 now, so I've been listening to David since 1990, since the True Vibrations. And even though I'm a devout Christian and I believe in the historical Christ, just like Stephen there, I do agree that, you know, it's probably all placebo. But we believe at the end of the day, you know, these young type archetypical ideas. So to sign off really quick, because I know we're running out of time, Richie, keep up the good work. You're doing a great job.
Not at all, mate. Thanks for calling, Colin. Good. Shame there wasn't enough time. We'll get you back on again in the future. It must be a year since you phoned in.
I will email you soon, and thank you very much for your help.
Cheers, Colin. Thanks for that. Colin there, calling in Dublin. That more or less wraps up the phone-in section of this programme. Should have been, we should have maybe made a bit longer out of it. But well, listen, we'll do more of them in the future, and they'll become a regular feature with Jamie in the very, very, very near future. That's more or less it for the show. Thank you very much to Michael Shrimpton for coming on earlier on. Great to have him on. Staggering stuff, really, when you think about what he said about Grenfell Tower at the end. Is it true? I have no idea. What I do know is Michael believes it's true. And when you make programmes like this, that's good enough for me. I'm not saying it doesn't matter if it's true or not. It does matter. But when a guest is telling the truth as they believe it to be the truth, that's all that matters to me. It's up to you to decide whether he gave enough information. Now, I don't think he did give enough information. Michael has sources at GCHQ and other intelligence agencies. He does. We know this to be true. And he said those sources told him that there was an ISIS cell at Grenfell, and through that there was a mishap and explosive material went off in a fridge. I know Michael believes it, but I wouldn't run with it. You know, but if I was a tabloid newspaper editor, I would run with it. I would say intelligence sources are claiming that an ISIS cell was operating out of Grenfell Tower. But anyway, interesting guy is Michael Shrimpton. Master, thank you to Jamie. Jamie, say goodnight.
Goodnight, everyone.
You'll be hearing from Jamie again real soon. Stay in touch with davidicke.com/headlines. Do listen to fabradiointernational.com and do spend some time on richieallen.co.uk. Going to leave you with some Bon Jovi, little blues number from the New Jersey album called Love for Sale. That will close out the programme. The podcast will be up soon. I'll have the YouTube of Michael Shrimpton on very early tomorrow in the AM. Look after yourselves and one another. I've been Richie Allen. Thank you. Bye. See you tomorrow. Bye.
Check out my mail, there was this letter that read, said, love for sale, love for sale. I picked up the phone, everyone could. I put my fingers through the walker to the telephone book. You can't catch a fish if I ain't out the hook. I said, love for sale, love for sale. Now send up a signal and throw me a line. Somebody's date is gonna be Valentine. It might not be legal, but it's sure ain't a crime. They don't want something crazy. From my TV set, I tried the dating game. I haven't found it yet. I'm hoping that she's looking like a penthouse bear. Yeah. Love for sale, yeah. Love for sale. Love for sale. I guess I learned my lesson. It was easy to see. But my own lady, she gave this joke on me. I'll never look where I forgot it to be. There was love for sale, love for sale, love for sale.
Hey, man.
Love for sale.
Got some love for sale, man.
Love for sale. My old lady liked it.
Your old lady liked that too.
Love for sale.
I play some blues for you, man.
I got the blues. You should see my mama. I'm talking about the blues.
said, hey, I got love for sale. You remember the shotgun one? Is that what that was?
That was a shotgun one, oh, right here.